these goals. A journey into a world that is just beyond our comprehension. The world of the paranormal.
To the 13 Skulls. Today we're going to be taking a look at King Arthur's Round Table may have been found, the town where time stood still, the no-fly zone on the moon, the euthanasia roller coaster, a supposed alien was killed by a dog attack in Brazil, and new sonar images show a possible image of the Loch Ness Monster. That's coming up in a lot more in this 60-second episode of the 13 Skulls. Well, welcome back, everybody. I really appreciate you coming out and taking a listen to this show. Let's get one or two things out of the way here. I've had to make room for some of the new shows by taking down some of the early shows, some of the shows that were made 2 years ago. I had to take them down to make room for new ones. So just wanted to let you guys know about that. That there's not going to be as many shows in the archive. So some of you people who are coming on to the show late, who are just now starting to listen to the show, you're not going to be able to hear some of the earlier shows. One of these days I might be able to put them back up there, but for now, they've been taken down. So just wanted to let you guys know about that. I wanted to give a big thank you to Chris for your donation to the show. It really means a lot to me. The money that you sent will definitely keep the show going for at least another couple of months. It really does help out a lot more than you know. If any of you guys want to make a donation, there's a little button on the left sidebar of the website at the13skulls.com. You can click on that. It'll send you to another webpage on the 13 Skulls that will have another donation link. For some reason, I couldn't get it to work any better than that, but just, click on the one on the sidebar and then click on the one on the page that comes up, and then that'll take you there. But don't feel like you have to. I know times are tough, so don't worry about it if you don't want to. If you don't have the money, please don't send it. I don't want to take, money and make anybody have a hardship. But anyway, thank you, Chris. I really do appreciate it. I wanted to give a shout out to Felicia, or Conspiracy Fury, number 1947, and her roller derby team. She was going to plan on doing the 5K zombie obstacle course that we talked about in the last show. If you did it, darling, I would love to hear what it was like. It just looked really fun. It looked like a good time. And, you know, I just wanted to give a shout out to you. I hope you're doing good. I hope your roller derby team goes to the finals of whatever it is that they do with roller derby. I'm not too familiar with it, but good luck to you. I hope it was fun. Let me know if you did go. And Mr. Miles over there in the UK. Well, man, I've talked to the authorities and they said you can come back to Texas, but you and I are no longer allowed to go near any goat farms. Sorry, man. I tried to tell them what happened, but they simply wouldn't listen to me. Y'all, it's an inside joke. You wouldn't get it unless you were reading some of the Facebook posts. But yeah, Miles and I aren't allowed to go back near any goat farms. Not really, but still, it's funny. Anyway, you know, I love having a good time. You guys, you got to laugh during life. You really do. You can't take it serious all the time. You have to have a little bit of fun and smile. I mean, you've got to have a laugh here and there. You can't take things seriously all the time. It's just not good for you. It's not healthy. You have to joke around. Anyway, let's go ahead and get on with the rest of the show. All right, well, the first thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of telegraph.co.uk. Apparently, or supposedly, King Arthur's Round Table may have been found. Archaeologists searching for King Arthur's Round Table have found a circular feature beneath the historic King's Knot in Stirling. The King's Knot, a geometrical earthwork in the former royal gardens below Stirling Castle, has been shrouded in mystery for hundreds of years. The knot, as it appears today, dates from 1620s. Its flat-topped central mound is thought to be much older. Archaeologists from Glasgow University, working with the Stirling Local Historical Society, conducted the first-ever non-invasive survey of the site in May. Their findings show there was indeed a round feature on the site that predates the visible earthworks. Historian John Harrison, chair of the SLHS, who initiated the project, said archaeologists using remote sensing geophysics have located remains of a circular ditch and other earthworks beneath the King's Knot. The find shows that the present mound was created on an older site and throws new light in a tradition that King Arthur's Round Table was located in this vicinity. There's a lot more to this article here, quite a bit more that you can go and read through. And it does show a picture there of the King's Knot on the grounds of Stirling Castle. And it does appear to be, you know, a round feature. Would this have been considered to be a table? I do know that in some times that I've heard in the past, a plateau, a mountain that goes up from a valley, that plateau that flattens off at the top, that basically turns into another flat plain. There's one in Virginia like that called Bent Mountain. You drive to the top of it and it's flat. It doesn't go up and go down like a typical mountain peak that you would think of. I've heard some people refer to those as a table. I've also heard some other geological things being referred to as a table too, but I just thought it was really interesting. There's a picture there, like I said, that you can go and take a look at the King's Knot and, you know, see for yourself and read the article and make the decision on your own. That's the best way to do anything anyway. Draw the conclusion for yourself. All right, well, the next thing that I just wanted to direct you guys in the way of is called worldufophotos.org. And basically what it is just kind of an archive of UFO photos from all over the globe. It's an interesting site. It's kind of an interactive slideshow type of thing that you guys can go and take a look at. It's really interesting to go and take a look at. I really think you guys should go and look at it and see for yourself. But anyway, let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of metro.co.uk. A Guatemalan pig was born with a mutant head after a UFO was seen in the sky. Now, I've seen some of these before. It doesn't necessarily look to be that of a human, which they're calling it. But either way, it's still odd, especially when you mix this in with UFO. But is it really? Aliens have been blamed for the freakish appearance of a pig born in the remote village of Santa Cruz El Chol. Residents of the South American village have decided that the pig's odd human head shape is the doing of visitors from outer space, after strange bright lights were spotted hovering in the sky in the night of its birth. The poor pig, which is one of a litter of 11, has been described as looking like a cross between a human and something from the alien movies. Farmer Loreno Escobar Arias said, "I was shocked. It was a really terrifying experience. It looked like some kind of an alien creature." However, local health officials have suggested that there are more earthly reasons for the pig's appearance. We don't know for certain, but it could have been caused by a genetic problem or by environmental pollution. A bit closer to home, pathologists are investigating a series of animal mutilations in Wales, with aliens once again the suspected culprits. There's not much more to this article here, but it is rather odd. There's a picture of the pig there. It's a black pig. It's got two white front hooves, and it does look rather odd. If you do look at it, it kind of resembles a monkey in a way, just from the picture they have here, but it is a small picture, so it's kind of hard to tell. But go and take a look at it. Let me know what you think about the human-pig hybrid, or alien-pig hybrid. Speaking of odd, this next video that I wanted to share with you is just creepy. I mean, if you like creepy, for me, this is almost the epitome of creepy. I don't know how a lot of you feel, but kids can be rather creepy, and so can gas masks. They're just creepy. You mix the two together, and you're going to give me goosebumps all over. This video is called The Girl in the Gas Mask. It's courtesy of LiveLeak.com, and basically all it is, and you'll see, is just a girl riding her bike in this public place with people all around. She's got on yellow shorts and a yellow shirt. She looks like she couldn't be more than maybe 10 years old, maybe 12. She's riding around on a bike, and she's got on a gas mask. It's really, really creepy. I want you to just go take a look at it. And let me know what you think about the girl in the gas mask. It's just crazy. The people that are filming, I guess, are just laughing at her. She's got like what, maybe a bag of candy in her hand or something. You know, she's got a ponytail with a little red scrunchy thing going on in the back. It's just creepy. It's just creepy. I want you guys to go and take a look at it. This next article is courtesy of telegraph.co.uk. A caveman from 2 million years ago may be the missing link. A creature from 2 million years ago with an advanced brain and hands capable of making tools could be the best candidate yet for the missing link, quote-unquote, between humans and our ape ancestors, at least according to scientists. Australopithecus sediba, whose remains were discovered in a South African cave in 2009, had a long thumb and relatively short fingers like a modern man and a brain shaped like that of modern humans. Scientists believe the creature walked upright, but not in the same way as we do today. Until now, it was believed that our earliest identifiable ancestors were Homo habilis and Homo rudolphensis, fossils that were found in East Africa. But the newly discovered creature, described in 5 papers in the journal Science Today, is several hundred thousand years older than that. Professor Lee Berger from the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg said, "The many very advanced features found in the brain and body, and the earlier date, make it possibly the best candidate for our ancestor genus, the genus Homo, as in Homo sapien. The caves of Malapa, where the fossils were discovered, lie nearly 30 miles northwest of Johannesburg. The juvenile, which was found aged between 10 and 13 in modern human terms, had a well-preserved skull that enabled scientists to study the brain shape in detail. X-ray analysis showed that although only slightly larger than a chimpanzee's brain, it was human-like in appearance. The adult female's hand was powerfully strong, hinting at tree climbing, yet also had a thumb and short fingers which indicate an ability to grip." Now, it does show the hand here, at least the bones from the hand that you should go take a look at. It is about maybe 2/3 to 3/4 the size of a normal human male's hand. It does look as if it does have a thumb. I mean, the thumb looks almost as long as the fingers, maybe about 1/3 shorter or maybe 1/4 shorter, but it does resemble the human hand. It's really an interesting thing, you know, to know that they found something that they believe is 2 million years old. I mean, the timeline of the human history and the history of just the Earth in general, but human history is such a foggy, cloudy, uncertain thing that nobody truly knows how long we've been here, whether or not we actually are evolving from, you know, from something else into something else. I know that evolution, to some degree at least, does happen, but where does the human history truly begin? It's a question that I've always wondered, and I don't know if I'll ever get an answer. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on to another article, which is courtesy of BeforeIt'sNews.com. This one is just an odd, strange thing that is slightly outdated because it refers to September 11th, whenever the planes hit the World Trade Center in New York. It's a chalk drawing of planes, twin towers, and a traumatized girl. They've been hanging in a Scottish office since the 1980s. The decades-old artwork is said to possibly be a terrifying premonition of the tragic events of 9/11. The decades-old artwork shows a forlorn young girl flanked by two jet planes and twin towers swamped by flames. But many have expressed disbelief that it was drawn more than 10 years before the atrocity. Its creator, Willie Gardner, died on November 27th last year at the age of 78, making it impossible to know exactly what inspired him. His artwork shows the falling locks of the child's hair spiraling downwards, which looks like fire and smoke billowing into the sky from the towers. It really does, too. It does show the painting here. You can look like, you know, you can go and take a look at it and see what you think for yourself. What you're going to see in the center of the picture is a little girl looking up, slightly scared, like what's going on, you know, kind of diagonal up to the right. Technically, if you were her, it would be up to your left. But anyway, it shows some clouds, some strange buildings, maybe up in the right corner, maybe the sun shining down, I don't know. Some stars behind her. It does show two planes, them right near the World Trade Center towers, or what appears to be the World Trade Center towers, and then another set of the World Trade Center towers. If you read it from right to left as far as the picture goes, you know, it kind of makes sense, but it, you know, her hair does look like fire. It could just be a coincidence. Maybe, you know, it's just something that he enjoyed to draw, and it just, you know, it was a weird coincidence. Maybe it has nothing to do with 9/11 whatsoever. Possibly, you know, he could have drawn it sometime in the last 10 years and said he drew it before then. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting. There's a little bit more there for you guys to go and read through. You know, there's a longer article for those of you who like to go and read long articles like that. We've got to make a move on. We've been recording for a little while now, and we've got a ton of stuff to go through. So let's go to move on to another article courtesy of BeforeIt'sNews.com. Numerous alien sightings in Bates County, Missouri. There are one or two pictures here that are supposedly been taken from Bates County of aliens. I thought they were interesting. One of them kind of looks like a person with half a head. It's really creepy. Another one kind of looks like that pareidolia, where you think you see a face when there really isn't one, but it does look like an alien face. Big eyes, small nose, small mouth. I want you guys to go and take a look at these pictures and let me know what you think. They're really interesting. You can look at them, you know, a little bit larger than the way they have them in the article if you click on them, but they're not a whole lot larger than that, except for the one that kind of looks like the pareidolia one. It does look odd. It almost looks like there is a reflection off of the eyes. I want you guys to go and take a look at them and let me know what you think. The next article that we're going to take a look at is courtesy of USNews.com. Documents show that the feds believed in the Yeti. Newly unearthed State Department documents confirm for the first time Uncle Sam's belief that the abominable snowman roamed the mountains of Nepal in the 1950s, a finding that has shocked federal officials, including the archivist who discovered the papers. Long written as a myth, it was never caught or photographed. The documents provided by the National Archives show that the officials in the State Department, Foreign Service, and U.S. Embassy in Kathmandu, Nepal, not only believed in Yeti, but endorsed rules for American expeditions to follow when hunting the toothy monster down. There are, at present, three regulations to expeditions searching for the Yeti in Nepal. These regulations are to be observed, said a memo from the embassy written on State Department letterhead. Now, you can go and actually take a look at this memo if you really wanted to. It's an interestingly odd thing to know. I mean, they have like a PDF version of it here from the archives.gov that you can go and take a look at. I thought it was really interesting to know that they're actually going to have this there. You can go and read more of the National Archives recovered stolen Lincoln documents that, you know, talk more about this. The first rule required that expeditions buy a permit. The second demanded that the beast be photographed or taken alive. Quote, it must not be killed or shot at except in an emergency arising out of self-defense, unquote, wrote Embassy Counselor Ernest Fisk on November 30th of 1959. And the third regulation says, any news proving the existence of the abominable snowman must be cleared through the Nepalese government, which probably wanted to take credit for the discovery. Archivist Mark Murphy said he couldn't believe his eyes when he discovered the long-ignored papers written at the end of the Eisenhower administration. I thought I was seeing things, he said. These documents showed that finding the Yeti was a big deal in the 1950s. It goes to show the government was taking this seriously. There's a lot more here to this article, or a little bit more here. There's a couple more paragraphs here for you to go and read. I just thought it was interesting. Like I said, you can go and take a look at the document for yourself and see what these regulations are in the language they wrote them on the actual letterhead that they had for the State Department. It's just an interesting thing. I love to hear that the government actually took the time out to search for Yeti. All right, well, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of telegraph.co.uk. Again, we're on the Yetis. According to this article, it says Yetis do exist and live in the Siberian mountains, according to a region that has found indisputable proof of the existence of the hairy beasts in an expedition. Or at least it's been claimed. The Russian coal mining region of Kemerovo said in a statement on its website that footprints and possibly even hair samples belonging to the Yeti were found on the research trip to its remote mountains. During the expedition to the Azovskaya Cave, conference participants gathered indisputable proof that the Shiria Mountains are inhabited by the, quote, snowman. The expedition was organized after Kemerovo's governor invited researchers from the United States, Canada, and several other countries to share their research and stories of encounters with the creature at a conference. They found his footprints, his supposed bed, and various markers with which the Yeti marks his territory, said the statement. The collected artifacts will be analyzed in a special laboratory. You know, I don't know if you believe in Yetis or not. I have to say that there's always going to be a chance. Until we've covered every single inch of this entire planet, inside and out, we're never going to know exactly everything that's here. Science is always making new discoveries. I just like to think that there's a possibility. Do I believe that there's a whole herd of, you know, or group of Yetis running around? Not necessarily, but it's always possible. Anything is always possible. The next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of uk.news.yahoo.com. There's been some sensation going around lately about a boy that came out of the woods in Germany saying that him and his dad had been living in the woods for 5 years and that he, you know, his dad had just died and, you know, he had come out of the woods looking for help, I guess. He's 17 years old and he's supposedly been living in the woods. His grandparents come out and said that he's just a normal kid. A Swiss couple who said the boy who emerged from the woodland in Germany claiming he had lived in the woods for the past 5 years is their grandson. The pair are due to give DNA tests, which will be matched with the teenager Ray, who is dubbed, quote, the forest boy after his story became public. The blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy claimed to remember few details about his life and where he had been when he pitched up on the steps of a town hall in East Berlin on September 5th. He spun a tale, in accented English, that gripped the imagination of the world that he had been living in a tent in a forest for 5 years with his father, called Ryan, and that his mother, Doreen, had perished in a car crash 5 years previously. He said he began walking towards Berlin after his father died suddenly in the woods a fortnight before his arrival. He said he buried him along the trees. "I'm all alone. Please help me," he said. He was taken into care at the cost of the German taxpayer at around $2,500 a month. But the tale he wove began to appear to have more holes than a Swiss cheese block. A check of police computers in all 16 states of Germany showed up that no woman called Doreen had ever died in a car crash in Germany in the past 10 years. No sign of a grave had been found in cursory searches of forest in the Harz Mountains along the Bavarian-Czech border, and he was unable to pinpoint the forest where he said he lived. And there's a little bit more to this article here that you can go and take a look at, but apparently it's all one big hoax. And this kid, there's a picture there that you can go and take a look at him and see for yourself what the guy looks like. He looks like a normal kid, you know, normal bowl kind of haircut. You know, he's smiling. He just looks, it's just strange to know that people are, you know, would lie about things like this. It really does make it hard to believe anything when you hear it at all. But anyway, let's go ahead and move on to one more article. We're going to take a break after this one. It's courtesy of bbc.co.uk. Who was Peter the Wild Boy? From feral children to human pet at court in Georgian England, Peter the Wild Boy caused a sensation. A new analysis of his portraits may have solved the mystery of his unusual characteristics. No one knows if his name was really Peter, because he couldn't talk, nor did he walk, preferring to scamper on all fours, picking people's pockets, and stealing kisses. Peter had been found living alone and naked in a German forest in 1725, presumably abandoned by his parents who struggled to cope. The following year, at about 12, he was brought to London by George I, where he became a human pet at Kensington Palace. There was much fanciful speculation that he had been raised by wolves or perhaps bears, and this is why he ate with his hands, disliked wearing clothes, and could not be taught to speak. At the time, people assumed Peter acted the way he did because he was a wild child. They didn't suspect that something else could have been afflicting him. Lucy Worsley, curator of historic royal palaces, initially assumed autism, but found more clues in this portrait of Peter. Now, there's a portrait there that you can go and take a look at. And the things that she found in her analysis of him were, one, he had a short stature. Two, he had lustrous mop of thick curly hair. Three, hooded eyelids. Four, Cupid's bow mouth with a pronounced curve to the upper lip. Five, he disliked clothes but was wrestled daily into a green suit. And six, pictured holding acorns and oak leaves, symbolic of living in the wild woods, and some fingers on his left hand, not seen, were fused together. She says that it's possibly a rare genetic condition known as Pitt-Hopkins syndrome, which honestly I've never heard of before, but there's a picture of the collar that Peter had to wear whenever he was, that if he was ever lost, it showed where, it said where you could find him. It's kind of like a collar you put on a dog, call this number, return here if lost, and it does show it there. It's rather odd to know that this kid was kept as a pet. But it's also odd to know that, he would have lived in the woods by himself. Was he a feral child, or did he have Pitt-Hopkins syndrome? Either way, it's a really odd thing. There's a lot more to this article here that you can go and take a look at and learn more about Peter the Wild Boy. All right, you guys, we're going to take a little bit of a break here. When we get back, we're going to be taking a look at the town where time stood still. A researcher cites ancient Minoan-era computer. The doomsday comet Elenin is said to pass by Earth tomorrow, and the nuclear bomb survival kit made of beer and candy discovered under a school. Well, you guys stay put. We'll be back in just a minute.
Yes, this is Chad Stemke, author of Stargate Detroit, and you are listening to the 13 Skulls.
Hi, I'm a skeptic.
And I'm Nessie, the wee beastie who lives in the look.
I want to talk about Monster Talk, the podcast that skeptically examines monster stories.
Oh, listen to your fancy talk. Weren't you just watching the woo-woo monster shows on the telly last night?
Huh? Oh, yeah. But I watched those because they helped me hone my skeptical...
Do not be telling me your porky pies, lad.
Look, why don't you go back in that water over there and let me talk to people about Monster Talk?
Ooh, does it have pictures?
No, it doesn't have pictures. It's a podcast.
Oh, I like pictures myself. That's proper television.
Look, if you like pictures so much, then how come all the photos of you are so blurry?
I don't know what you're talking about. I've never had my picture taken.
Well, that's probably true.
I don't want to be on your show. I want to be on Britain's Got Talent like Susan Boyle. I want to sing a proper Scottish song.
Anyway, please check out Monster Talk from your preferred podcast aggregator or from monstertalk.org.
I'm going to be rich.
Hi, I'm Charlie Silvestri.
And I'm Jason Mundock. WCHE will present a new one-hour music showcase.
In the first half, Up Close and Acoustic with Charlie Silvestri will feature music performance and interview radio.
In the second half, Around the Woodstove with Jason Mundock will feature conversations with artists about their music and the inspiration behind it.
We'll be including local, regional, and national touring acts.
Look for us on Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on 1520 AM WCHE and WCHE1520.com.
Brought to you by Taylor's Music of Westchester.
What if the world suddenly wasn't what it seemed to be? For all the latest news from beyond the mainstream, tune into the Mysterious Universe podcast. Visit mysteriousuniverse.org for details.
All right, welcome back, everybody. The next thing that I want to take a look at is courtesy of ghosttheory.com. It originates out of La Belle, Florida. It came from the Gulf Shore Life, originally from February of 1984. It's about the town where time stood still. It begins on June 3rd, 1926, when an innocent man lost his life at the hands of a lynch mob. A laborer, Henry Patterson, came to the back door of a La Belle home seeking a drink of water. The housewife panicked and ran screaming from her house. Rumor and hysteria fueled the fires of tragedy as the veneer of civilization fell away from ordinarily quiet, law-abiding men on a day they and their descendants remember with shame and regret. Attempts were made to prosecute those responsible for the lynching, and eventually about a dozen men were indicted. The victim had been shot many times, but the evidence was conflicting and many people were involved. The judge, presiding over his courtroom in the Hendry County Courthouse, declared it was impossible to fix blame on any particular persons. Consequently, there were no convictions, and the case was dismissed. After the lynching, the spring weather was hot and dry. There had been little rain and farmers were anxiously watching the sky. Eventually, clouds began to form and a welcome rain was anticipated. As the clouds built up, the sun was blocked out. Thunder boomed and rumbled in the distance, but when the rain came, it was only a few spattering drops, barely enough to dampen the dust on the unpaved streets. Suddenly, a shattering crash seemed to shake the earth, followed by a strange tolling of a bell. Lightning had struck the courthouse clock tower, smashing and burning the clockworks and motor. The vibrations of the bell seemed to linger as the storm swiftly passed and the clouds rolled away. It was an accident of nature, of course, and the county commissioners quickly repaired the clock. Then it happened again and again. The wiring was reinspected, lightning rods were installed on the tower and the tiled courthouse roof. Every conceivable precaution was taken, but nothing seemed to do any good. Repeatedly, the clock was repaired, and each time, lightning smashed again into the tower. The story began to circulate that the repeated lightning strikes on the courthouse weren't actually accidents of nature, but a sign of God's anger against the town. Bosch snorted the commissioners and repaired the clock. However, after each repair, lightning struck again. Then, on July 4, 1929, as citizens prepared to observe the holiday, there came a bolt so vicious and terrifying that everyone in town was stunned. People rushed to the courthouse and stood aghast. The lightning had smashed a large section of cornerstone from the top of the tower. The huge stone had crashed through the roof and buried itself in the floor, almost on top of the judge's bench in the courtroom where the abortive trial had been held. This time, there was no ignoring the charge of divine retribution. Newspapers across the state picked up the story and pointed fingers at LaBelle, and the legend spread that time would stand still and the town would live with the symbol of its guilt until God's wrath was appeased. In desperation, the commissioners had the clock dismantled and its work stored in the courthouse basement. They removed the hands from the clock and its four faces remained mute and useless, a landmark visible from every direction. But now many averted their eyes, for its presence was a grim and constant reminder of the events of that terrible day. Years passed and changes took place. The town grew and new people arrived. Old people died, babies were born, and life went on. People didn't want to be reminded of the lynching and didn't talk about it, and newcomers had never heard of it. The townspeople became so accustomed to seeing the courthouse clock without hands that some began to assume that there had never been any. At least one book was published with a photograph of the courthouse and annotation that things were so easygoing in LaBelle that the clock did not bother to keep time. Perhaps God was being appeased, and perhaps it had even helped when the old bell was removed from the clock tower and donated to the new First Baptist Church. In fact, that may have been the turning point, for after the bell was hung in the church steeple, lightning never again struck the clock tower. There's nothing like being sure, though, and the people of LaBelle had grown cautious over the years. Besides, no one really wanted to be the first to test the wrath of God. As years passed, it was finally decided that new works would be installed into the clock tower as well as new hands on the four faces. Newcomers watched curiously, and old-timers literally held their breath as the switch was thrown and the gears began turning. Time had started again in LaBelle. As of July 2011, the hands on the clock are stopped once again. The hands on each face are a little different, but all shows the clock stopped on or near noon or midnight. It's an interesting story. I really wanted to throw this out there because I found it to be one of those things that's kind of going along with what people are talking about a lot these days, the end of the world and things like that. Is there a wrath of God? Is there a way to appease God? I'm just asking this question being someone that knows or at least thinks they know the answer. And I'm going to keep that to myself because that doesn't really matter. What matters is your opinion of it. What do you think? Was this the wrath of God, or was it just simply a strange series of coincidences? Either way, I thought it was really interesting. Let's go ahead and move on to the next thing, which is courtesy of dailymail.co.uk. Coins are mysteriously appearing in trunks up and down the country in the UK. It appears to be doing so on this mysterious coin-studded trunk. The strange phenomenon of gnarled old trees with coins embedded all over the bark has been spotted on trails from the Peak District to the Scottish Highlands. There's not a whole lot there. People put these coins in there for good luck. It's kind of a tradition thing, and there's plenty of pictures there. You can see a guy actually putting one in there, so they're not all that mysterious. But it's a very odd thing. If you go look at it, it's oddly beautiful in a way. It looks kind of like this, you know, this one tree, especially this picture you'll see at the top. It just resembles more like barnacles on a boat side or the skin of a snake. It's really an odd thing. Most of the coins have been pounded in there and bent over, you know, put about halfway into the wood and then bent over. They're not falling out. Some of them, from my understanding, are really, really old. It dates back to about 1700s, where someone apparently had stuck one to it. There are some coins there that I bet are really worth quite a bit of money if you go look for them. But either way, I just thought it was really interesting. We've got a lot of stuff to go through, y'all, so I'm just going to plow right through this. The next article is courtesy of BackdoorSurvival.com. The 15 things you need to be ready for, well, the zombie apocalypse, 2012, the end of the world, that kind of stuff. You need a crank-up radio, one that you really don't need a battery for. You can crank one up. LED flashlights and batteries. Make sure you have plenty of those. They really come in handy. You really need a survival knife and candles, matches, lighters, or fire starters of some kind. It's really, really helps. It also does help to have pepper spray. You know, a lot of people can't start a fire, so having candles, matches, lighters, and fire starters really is good. You can get all that stuff for about 18 bucks. It's really not all that expensive. You can go to Maine Military Supply, BrigadeQuartermasters.com. You can go to Smoky Mountain Knife Works. They get all that stuff too. You need some pepper spray. You never know what you're going to need it for. You could just be defending off animals or people, dogs, doesn't really matter. A lightweight axe. I'm telling you, this stuff you really need, it would really come in handy if you know anything about survival. Some paracord, first aid kit, light sticks, a survival whistle, survival blanket, which is one of the things on here that I don't have. I need to get one of those. A water filtration system, which, believe you me, if you want clean water and don't want to have dysentery and your pants all the time, you're really going to want a water filtration system. A durable water bottle, which, you know, that wouldn't be too hurtful to have, but, you know, it really, you don't necessarily need it. Some duct tape, as always. Who couldn't survive without duct tape? You got to have that stuff. And an outdoor cook stove, which would come in handy, but you don't really truly need it. You can work your way around that. You can make a cook stove if you really wanted to with just some, you know, some pieces of sheet metal. You can even do it with a rock. It just a matter of how you wanted to do it. But with all this stuff, you're probably looking at a couple $100 to go get, but they really would come in handy. I'll post a link up here so you guys can, you know, go take a look at it. But if you wanted to, it's just backdoorsurvival.com. All right, let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of forbiddenarchaeology.com. There are just some ancient artifacts that I thought to be really weird, and there's just a couple of them here. The ancient coin from Illinois. This coin-like object from a well boring near Lawn Ridge, Illinois, was reportedly found at a depth of about 114 feet below the surface. According to information supplied by the Illinois State Geological Survey, the deposits containing the coin are between 200,000 and 400,000 years old. A metallic sphere from South Africa with three parallel grooves around its equator, the sphere was found in the Precambrian mineral deposits said to be 2.8 billion years old. Really odd. I want you guys to go and take a look at it. It's got a picture there. You can go and see it for yourself. The mysterious letters from a quarry. Raised letter-like shapes found inside a block of marble from a quarry near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania in 1978. The block of marble came from a depth of 60 to 70 feet in strata dated 500 to 600 million years old. Bizarre stuff. I want you guys to go and take a look at it. There is a picture there of the raised letters, the metallic sphere, and the coin-like object that was found in Illinois. I want you guys to go and take a look at it. The only one that's actually a true picture is the metallic sphere from South Africa that's apparently 2.8 billion years old. Bizarre stuff, it really is. Now, this next article is courtesy of BeforeIt'sNews.com, and it's on the same wavelength of stuff that's an impossibly old bit of Earth. This is supposedly a time traveler's footprint. The probability of time travel, you know, you never know. It might actually happen. I really couldn't tell you, but I thought it was really interesting. And there's more here on all that other stuff, too, if you really wanted to go and take a look at it. Basically, this is just a footprint of what appears to be a shoe of some kind that is in solid granite. Beyond impossible facts, the best evidence for the existence of time travel and time travelers are the human footprints left behind from a time when almost everyone can agree no humans could have existed naturally. James Snyder lives at the base of a mountain in Cleveland National Forest and has said relatively his life has been uneventful until 2002. He discovered a fossilized footprint on the mountain above his property. The print had been embedded in granite, rock estimated to be about 1 billion years old. I got out of my way to make a slip trail where nobody else has been, and I was actually looking for gold when he came across the footprint. H.W. Harkness, a medical doctor, is quoted by the Proceedings of the California Academy of Science from August of 1882. The proceedings describe Harkness's discovery and mentions that he found six sets of human tracks, each with from 1 to 17 footprints of apparently shoe-soled feet. The stride was close to that of a normal-sized man, approximately 2 feet, sometimes as much as 3 feet. The tracks were apparently made by more than one person. Over the years, many experienced trackers noticed the fossilized tracks. All agreed that the footprints were made by humans. It's just bizarre. I want you guys to go and take a look at this. Now, are these human footprints? I don't know. This one picture that is supposedly of the human footprint in granite, you can actually go and take a look at. It looks like a shoe had been stepped in this granite and had made this impression. It's a bizarre, bizarre thing that I can't really explain. There's another picture down here of a barefoot human footprint that's in rock and said to be 290 million years old. It's, absolutely bizarre. I want you guys to go and take a look at it. Let me know what you think about the footprints in granite. Now, the next thing that I want to take a look at is courtesy of news.discovery.com in the same realm of old stuff found in a weird place. Encased in pinkish marble-like slabs supporting a balustrade, the dinosaur bone, or what's left of it, has for centuries been the most faithful presence in the Cathedral of St. Ambrose in Milan. The rock contains what appears to be a horizontal section of a dinosaur's skull. You can go and take a look at it there. It's really an odd thing. It does look like bone encased in granite. And basically what it is you'll see the cathedral there. And you know how they make stuff out of rock. Well, that's what they did. And apparently this had a dinosaur skull in it, or what looks to be a dinosaur skull. And had, you know, they had cut through it, a horizontal section through it to make this step or whatever it is they made, you know, with this piece of rock. It's an interesting thing. The calcareous rock, which in which the dinosaur remains are embedded, comes from the rich fossil-bearing site of Mount San Giorgio, which is on the UNESCO World Heritage List. It's not clear what animal the skull belongs to. Andrea Tintori, the University of Milan paleontologist who spotted the fossil near the altar, said the rock contains what appears to be a horizontal section of a dinosaur skull. The image looks like a CT scan and clearly shows the cranium, the nasal cavities, and numerous teeth. You guys got to go take a look at this. It's really interesting. There's a picture there that you can go and take a look at. It looks to be maybe about 20 to 30 centimeters long. It's an odd thing. It really is. If it isn't, in fact, a dinosaur bone, it does look like a bone and it looks out of place for where it's at in the rock. There's nothing like that around it. It doesn't look just like pareidolia or anything. It actually looks like a piece of bone in rock. It's an odd and wonderful thing. It's crazy. So this next article is courtesy of athensnews.gr. Researcher Manos Tsakritsis, who hails from Crete, where the Bronze Age Minoan civilization flourished from approximately 2700 BC to 1500 century BC, means that the Minoan Age object discovered in 1898 in Paleocastro site in the Sitia district of western Crete preceded the heralded Antikythera mechanism by almost 1,400 years and was the first analog and portable computer, quote-unquote, in history. While searching in the Archaeological Museum in Heraklion in the Minoan Age findings with astronomical images on them, we came across a stone-made matrix unearthed in the region of Paleocastro Sitia. In the past, hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly, if not, my apologies. In the past, archaeologists have expressed the view that the carved symbols on its surface are related with the sun and moon. The Cretan researcher and university professor said that after the relief of the image-spoked disc on the right side of the matrix was analyzed, it was established that it served as a cast to build a mechanism that functioned as an analog computer, used to calculate solar and lunar eclipses. The mechanism was also used as a sundial and as an instrument calculating the geographical latitude. There's not much more there to it, but you can take a look at the picture of this mechanism that they're saying was found and made 1,400 years earlier than the Antikythera mechanism. Interesting. I really like it. It shows a whole lot about the thing itself, but it's all in what appears to be, well, a completely different language that I can't read. But it's interesting to say the least. I want you guys to go and take a look at it and let me know what you think. This next article is courtesy of lastdaysoftheincas.com, and apparently the Incas fattened up their children before they sacrificed them. I always think that mummies are really, really interesting. I found them to be oddly beautiful, but the Incas did it right. They did it to the point where the people truly were like in a moment of history. Like they are just stuck there. They are just encased in this one moment of time and have never moved on from it. Their mummies are beautifully preserved, very creepy to say the least, but beautifully preserved. And from my understanding, it's from the dry weather that they have there where they put the mummies. I want you guys to go and take a look at this. There's a lot to this article here. We've got a lot to go through, but there is evidence saying that the Incas fattened up their children before they sacrificed them. What got me the most is how well preserved they are. Absolutely amazing that they could be preserved this well. It's really an interesting thing. I want you guys to go and take a look at it. Now, this next thing is courtesy of archaeologydaily.com, and apparently visible only from above, mystifying Nazca-like lines have been discovered in the Middle East. They stretch from Syria to Saudi Arabia and can be seen from the air but not the ground and are virtually unknown to the public. They are the Middle East's own version of the Nazca lines, ancient geoglyphs or drawings that span deserts in southern Peru. And now, thanks to a new satellite mapping technology and aerial photography program in Jordan, researchers are discovering more of them than ever before. They number well into the thousands. Referred to by archaeologists as wheels, these stone structures have a wide variety of designs, with a common one being a circle with spokes radiating inside. There's no more pictures. I mean, there's a lot more to this article here. I'm not going to sit here and read the whole thing, but there is a picture here of these wheels with spokes on them. Does it have anything to do with Ezekiel's wheels? Or is it just so happened to be something that maybe was more of a community setting that looks like a wheel from above? You know, like a neighborhood. If you look at the grid system of a neighborhood from a plane, you'll see what I'm saying. But maybe it's just a smaller version of that. Maybe it was just these little clans that were living together. Or was this some kind of a sign to some type of extraterrestrial creature that was flying in from wherever a long time ago, and people wanted to make these geoglyphs to signal them, maybe? I don't know. There's so many different ways and things you could think of about these that it's really hard to know what to think about them. So go read this article, look at the pictures, and draw the conclusions for yourself. If you have an opinion on it, let me know. I'd love to hear about it. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of, now, there's a couple of articles here. It's courtesy of beforeusnews.com, and there was an earthquake in Washington recently that you guys know about, right? So, this earthquake that happened in Washington, apparently, from what some, I guess, conspiracy theorists are saying, or what some people are saying, it was actually a nuclear weapon going off an underground base. There is supposedly some evidence saying that the bases have been built by the U.S. government, ostensibly used since the early 1960s, and they wanted to get rid of them, so they basically just blew them up with a nuclear weapon. That's what they're saying happened and caused a sinkhole in the backyard of a Virginia home. But there is some speculation that maybe it was just an earthquake, but I don't know. I want you guys to go and take a look at this and let me know what you think about the possible underground base being destroyed by a nuclear weapon and causing the earthquake that hit Washington. I don't know. It's a bit much for me to believe, but at the same time, truth is usually stranger than fiction. Now, there was another article to go along with that. It's courtesy of beforeusnews.com. Again, a scientist is saying that he confirms the story of the nuclear attack on an underground base in Washington. There's a JPEG there or a picture that shows the Washington nuclear detonation, as they're calling it, in green compared to an earthquake in black. Now, I do have to admit that it is a sudden shock compared to a slow buildup like an earthquake. I don't know. I'm not sure. I would think that there would be more damage done on the surface, like a bigger sinkhole than what they were saying was the one that occurred from this. The sinkhole was maybe, 2/3 the size of a football field. If that's the case, then that means that this nuclear blast would not have been massive. It would have just been fairly small, so that wouldn't really do that much damage above. I don't know. I mean, there are smaller nuclear weapons compared to the bigger nuclear weapons. I just found it interesting that people are saying that that's what it is. You know, it's just an interesting thing. Recently, there's been a lot of stuff coming out about some strange pictures and things that are on the moon, and now they're saying NASA, the space agency, is saying that there is a forbidden zone or no-fly zone on the moon. This article is courtesy of BeforeIt'sNews.com. Feeling the pressure of mounting investigations launched by citizen activists concerning alien structures and artifacts on the moon and Mars, the U.S. National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or NASA, has made a bold and incredible move. They have announced a no-fly zone on the moon. Although the space agency claims the purpose of the no-fly zones are to preserve and protect the historic landing sites of the Apollo astronauts, some question why the zones happen to include regions where heavy attention has been focused, areas where purported alien technology is lying scattered across the soil. Is it really alien technology, or is it us? I mean, technically, we're visiting the moon, so wouldn't the debris that we leave on the moon be the alien debris? You know, we would be aliens to the moon. We call it our moon, but we don't live there. So, you know, we visit there. If something is coming from somewhere else and visiting here, they're aliens. If we go from somewhere to there, we would be the aliens. So if we went to the moon, wouldn't we technically be the aliens? Anyway, it's an interesting set of photographs that I want you guys to go and take a look at. One of them is a very odd one. It looks like a big circle with a wall around it, with this little complex in the middle. It's supposedly at the Gassendi Crater. I just want you guys to go and take a look at it. You have to. You have to go take a look at it, because some of this stuff is so odd that I can't really explain it. It's just too bad that you can't really get a better close-up look of these, and I haven't been able to find any more. It just so happens to be that this one is the one that, you know, you can actually go and see the pictures. But anyway, let's go ahead and move on. There are some uncensored moon images, again, coming from BeforeIt'sNews.com. I really love this website. They got some great stuff. Thanks again to Rogan for sending it my way. But there's a video there. It's almost 11 minutes long, but it does show some really odd images from the moon. It has some good testimony there from some astronauts, some really good archival footage from the moon, or what is supposedly from the moon. And some of these images do kind of look as if they're maybe pyramid shape or kind of a monolith looking structure, but I want you guys to go and take a look at it. Either way, it looks really, really good. Now, the video that you're going to see, the videos that you see are from Jeff Rentz, if anybody knows that. And basically, they're his shows. He interviews the people while they're going along with, you know, the video to show you what they're talking about. You really need to go check this out. It's rather interesting. So, you know, we're going to take another quick break right after this next thing I wanted to point you guys in the direction of. After that, we're going to be taking a look at the Vampire Cruise. We're also going to be taking a look at some girls that were taken to the hospital in Hong Kong after seeing a ghost. So this one thing that I wanted to point you guys in the way of is from LiveLeak.com. It's UFO sightings of 2011. Now, some of them you've seen, the Jerusalem UFO, things like that. But some of them, if you go to around, I don't know, somewhere in the area of about 4 minutes and 20 seconds, you'll see this volcano erupting. You'll see these things come out of it that make these weird directions. Down at the bottom of the mountain, you'll see this bright, bright light, and it's there for a couple minutes, actually. And then it just goes away. Just all of a sudden, it's so bright that you can't see anything around it. And then, poof, it's gone, and you'll see this light move off to the right. You know, to the left of the volcano, but to the right from the view that you're looking at the camera. And it's just bizarre. I want you guys to go and take a look at it and let me know what you think. But like I said, scroll somewhere in the area of about, I don't know, 4 minutes, 25 seconds, something like that, 4 minutes, 30 seconds, and you'll see what I'm talking about this bright light at the bottom of the volcano. Plus, you'll see some lights coming in and out of the volcano and around the volcano. Absolutely bizarre. Really is. I want you guys to go and take a look at it and let me know what you think. When we come back, again, we got some good stuff, so you guys stay put. We'll be back in just a minute.
I bring you the pain and anguish of a thousand nightmares rolled into one.
Get wet! This is the Voice of Death!
All right, welcome back, everybody. The next thing I want to take a look at is courtesy of space.com. Comet Elenin is supposedly going to make its appearance, its closest moment to Earth, on October 16th, which is tomorrow, which is probably a little bit later than what you guys are going to hear this. So if we're still alive and going, then you're hearing this, then you know it didn't destroy the Earth. The moment long feared by conspiracy theorists is nearly upon us. The quote-unquote doomsday comet Elenin will make its closest approach to Earth Sunday, October 16th. Or what's left of it, anyway. Comet Elenin started breaking up in August after being blasted by a huge solar storm, and a close pass by the sun on September 10th apparently finished it off, astronomers say. So it will cruise within 22 million miles or 35.4 million kilometers of our planet on Sunday, and is likely to be a stream of debris rather than a completely intact comet, and the leftovers of Elenin won't return for 12,000 years. Folks are having trouble finding it, so I think it's probably dead and gone, said astronomer Don Yeomans of Near Earth Object Program office at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. That means it probably won't present much of a sky-watching show on Sunday, according to scientists, which is a sad thing because I'd like to actually see it. The doomsday comet's demise may come as a relief to some people, since apocalyptic rumors circulating on the internet portrayed the comet as a major threat to Earth, which it's not. There's a lot more there to this article that you can go and see. There is a picture there of Comet Elenin, a before and after, and basically it is about a tenth of what it was beforehand, but it's an interesting thing to know that it's going to come. I hope we get to see it. If anybody out there does get to see it, if you could take a picture or something to send it to me, I'd love to see it. Hopefully, you know, we'll be able to have a clear night and actually be able to watch this happen. But either way, I thought it was interesting that Comet Elenin is really no longer a threat. Now, this next thing that is just something quick I wanted to point you guys in the direction of. It's courtesy of au.news.com. In Anchorage, Alaska, hundreds of vampire enthusiasts will sail Alaska's fabled Inside Passage in the summer of 2012. A cruise that is tailored to their interests that combines gazing at glaciers with a late-night costume ball. The Vamps at Sea cruise is scheduled for late June, which is a time of near-constant daylight in the far north, which is really odd. It's vampires at sea, but yet they're going to be doing it in near-constant daylight. I think there's a little bit of contradiction there, but anyway, they've got curtains and they can block everything out so it can be as dark as they want, said organizer Linda Wolf. Odd, her last name is Wolf and it's vampires. Anyway, she is the president of Los Angeles-based company Cruises Incorporated, who is herself a fan of the vampire genre. Cruise groups have been organized around myriads of interests, with everyone from bird lovers to marathon runners getting their own boat trips. But there will be other special features, including a late-night costume ball, a scavenger hunt, and a vampire talent show. There's also a literal angle to the cruise, with vampire genre authors scheduled to speak, including a relative of the late Dracula writer Bram Stoker. The group will sail on a Holland-American ship, the Zwarderdam, or Zuiderdam, and will hit the usual ports of call, as such as Juneau, Glacier Bay, and Ketchikan. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting that they're having a vampire cruise. If anybody out there is going to do this next year, let me know. I'd love to hear how it went. Now, this next thing that I'm going to play for you is something that I found to be really interesting, and I really want to see.
His arms were like alligator skin, like claws.
It's just horrible, guttural, awful screeching sound.
Like legs and heads and blood.
Legend tells of a creature unlike anything we have ever known. An abomination that combines man with his fierce intellect and the raw ferocity and killing instincts of the alligator.
Creature, half man, half alligator. Sounds like something dreamed up in a Hollywood studio. In fact, this This particular story has caught the attention of the movie industry, and a new film Creature is being made based on this legend. But as you'll see, this may be one instance of art imitating life.
It's based off of a real incident that's been documented, actually going all the way back to the late 1800s.
It can only be described as mystical. It's not the kind of thing that you would normally find in any of the traditions attributed to the Loch Ness Monster or to the Bigfoot.
There's a story behind the monster. There's a mythology, something that's rarely seen in monster movies as of late.
He is truly petrifying. He is one scary dude.
That thing scared her to death.
I found him early the next morning in pieces.
You can watch the movie to decide for yourself. How much of the legend is just that?
Something just reach out of here and...
And how much is real?
He was killing mostly in defense. I think now he's killing for fun.
Don't see it alone.
All right, I found this in a post that Miles did over on Facebook, and thank you for posting this, Miles. Well, it's courtesy of dailymail.co.uk. The woman who aged from 23 to 73 in just a matter of days. The pictures look like an attractive woman in her 20s and her grandmother, but they are said to be the same person, apparently taken just days apart. The young Vietnamese woman at the center of the impossible medical case, Nguyen Thai Phong, claims the transformation may have come about after an extreme allergy to seafood. She's 26 and says she developed this puffy face and sagging skin in 2008, but was too poor to seek treatment. Earlier this month, doctors said they would examine her for free. Her husband, Tan Tuyen, insists the story is true and his love has not faded for his once beautiful wife. She's always worn a mask into public to hide her appearance from prying eyes. Displaying photos of a beautiful 21-year-old woman on her wedding day in 2006, Ms. Nguyen said, 5 years ago, I was rather pretty and not so ugly like this. Ms. Nguyen believes her condition was caused by a lifelong allergy to seafood. She basically aged rapidly. I mean, it's bizarre. She really does look like she is 50 years older than what she was in the picture next to the one of her being an old woman. It's rather odd. I mean, she does look like the same woman, and it really does look like her standing next to her grandmother. There's more to this here if you wanted to go and take a look at what's going on with this woman, but I really want you to go take a look at it and let me know if you think it's true or if it's not. It's coming from the Daily Mail, which is pretty reliable. I mean, I believe them for the most part. They're not like a real tabloid type of place, but at the same time, is this just a hoax? I don't know. But go take a look at the woman who aged from 23 to 73 overnight and let me know what you think. Now, this next article is courtesy of physorg.com. For those of you who love astronomy and physics, this one's for you. Young clays on Mars could be habitable regions for life. Two small depressions on Mars found to be rich in minerals that formed by water could have been places for life relatively recently in the planet's history, at least according to a new paper in the journal Geology. We discovered locations at Noctis Labyrinthus that show many kinds of minerals that were formed by water activity, said Catherine Weitz, lead author and senior scientist at the Planetary Science Institute. The clays we found, called iron magnesium smectites, are much younger at Noctis Labyrinthus relative to those found in ancient rocks on Mars, which indicates a different water environment in these depressions relative to what was happening elsewhere on Mars. Smectites are a specific type of clay mineral that readily expands and contracts with absorbed water. They contain silica plus aluminum, iron, or magnesium in their structures. They form by an alteration of the silicate minerals in the presence of non-acidic water. Weitz and her co-authors studied approximately 300 meters of vertically exposed layered rocks within 20 to 30 kilometer depressions, called troughs, near the western end of the Valles Marineris Canyon system. Weitz and her co-authors identified the same sulfates and smectites in the troughs were found elsewhere on Mars, but the progression of minerals over time from sulfates to smectites indicates a reverse order relative to what happened globally across Mars. There's more here that you guys can go and take a look at. I just found it to be really interesting that there's a place on Mars that life could have been, and much less actually be. You never know, they might actually find some kind of bacterial life on Mars. All right, but the next thing that I want to take a look at is something that's courtesy of WashingtonPost.com. A new super Earth that is 36 light years away from us might hold water. Astronomers on Monday announced the discovery of 50 new planets circling stars beyond the sun, including one quote-unquote super Earth that is the right distance from its star to possibly have water. If we are really, really lucky, this planet could be a habitat like Earth, said Lisa Kaltenegger of the Max Planck Institute for Astronomy in Heidelberg, Germany. The planet, dubbed HD85512b, circles an orange star somewhat smaller and cooler than our sun, about 36 light years away. The star is visible in the southern sky in the constellation Vela. The newly found planet circles this star every 59 days, putting it at the edge of the habitable zone where water could exist if atmospheric conditions were right. Astronomers have not determined whether the new super-Earth is rocky like Earth or a gassy planet like Jupiter, let alone whether it has an atmosphere. The new super-Earth is 3.5 times the mass of our Earth. It's an odd thing, and I really hope to hear more about this. There's nothing that really is, I mean, there's more to this article here that you can go and take a look at. But since 1995, astronomers have found more than 600 planets beyond Earth, and there's a catalog there that you can go and take a look at exoplanet.eu/catalog.php. You can go take a look at that and, you know, let me know what you think. I'd love to hear more about it. But there is a couple of pictures here that you can go and take a look at of an artist's rendition of what this planet would look like. Is it like Earth? I don't know. But it is the right distance away from its sun, its star, to be just like Earth. So anyway, I thought it was really interesting. Let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of news.discovery.com. Suicide by roller coaster. Want to enjoy the rest of your life along with the last ride of your life? That's what Julia Jonas Urbonus envisions with his euthanasia roller coaster. The 3-minute ride involves a long, slow climb, nearly a third of a mile long, that lifts one up to a height of more than 1,600 feet, followed by a massive fall in 7 strategically sized and placed loops. The final descent and series of loops take all of 1 minute, but the gravitational force, 10 Gs, 1 G being the normal gravity you feel on Earth, 10 Gs being 10 times that amount, from the spinning loops at 223 miles per hour in 1 minute is lethal. According to Urbonus, the euthanasia coaster is a hypothetic euthanasia machine in the form of a roller coaster engineered to humanely, with elegance and euphoria, take the life of a human being. While the thought of merging the fun and perhaps fear of a roller coaster with suicide doesn't occur to most people, it was a no-brainer for the designer. Briefly put, Urbonus said, "The inspiration was my PhD study and my long-term affair with amusement parks." Urbonus, who once worked in an amusement park in his native Lithuania, is a PhD candidate in London's Royal College of Arts Design Interactions Department. He considers this research in gravitational aesthetics. There's more to this here, but you can, I mean, there's quite a bit more to this here that you can go and take a look at, but there is a view of it there. It's insanely crazy, and you would never see me get on it, ever. You would never see me get on it at all, period, for any reason. It's absolutely insane. I want you guys to go and take a look at the euthanasia roller coaster. All right, well, this next thing I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of LochNessMystery.blogspot.com, and apparently there's been another sonar image taken of what is apparently the Loch Ness Monster. The story appeared in the Scottish edition of the Daily Mail for Thursday, the 15th of September. It looks like it did not make the UK website of the Mail, so it was reproduced here on this site outside of Scotland. It looks like a normal photograph and picture of the sonar. A sonar contact is a picture made from sound waves instead of light waves. The object is moving. It will be described in a trail of some shape and thickness. The only thing that really it says here that you know it might not be the Loch Ness Monster is there's no sign of a trademark elongated neck or the signature green humps or the fins, really. But is it just swimming along with its flippers off to its side without actually making any movement? And, you know, to be honest with you, there isn't really the image itself. It's just a picture that the person who was driving the boat, the fisherman that was on the boat, took a picture of the sonar. So it's not really all that great. His name is Marcus Atkinson. He's 42 and says that he knows the lock like the back of his hand. He said it was very weird and it was obvious that it wasn't a shoal of fish and it kept getting bigger and bigger. The thing is completely different from anything that he's ever seen before. He said it's one of the moments where you just think, what on earth is that? So he grabbed his mobile phone and took a picture before it disappeared off the screen. It's a really an odd thing. There's a lot more to this article here that you can go and take a look at. And there's a picture here that looks like it came out of the newspaper that it was in Scotland. The picture itself is really grainy. There's not much there you can really tell of anything distinct, but it was still interesting that there is another sighting of what is maybe supposedly or possibly the Loch Ness Monster. Now, this next thing is courtesy of LiveLeak.com. It's a picture with a little bit of an article here of a nuclear bomb survival kit made of beer and candy from the Cold War. It was a long-forgotten treasure that fascinated students decades ago, but new interest has led to a bunker to reemerge. Former students of the Wyoming Central School remember all too well the tours of the structure located in the basement beyond the school's records room. In the 1960s, a school janitor used to take students to the basement to see the bomb shelter as a means for preparation. A selection of civil defense supplies is displayed on a table in the Wyoming Central School basement, including a dry toilet, bottled water with the Genesee Brewing Company, and toilet paper. The janitor would take them in there to familiarize them with what to do in case the Cold War era emergency came about and they needed to go down there. A teacher and former student at the school, Ursula Faust, said that we knew but nobody ever asked for it except when we started doing the reunion planning. It's really an interesting thing. I want you guys to go and take a look at it. It looked like there's some gumdrops there and it shows a picture of the school itself. You see the cases of Genesee beer and the, you know, sanitation kit and the toilet paper. I just thought it was rather interesting that they had that kind of stuff in a survival kit. It's just bizarre. I've never seen that before. The beer, I can see it. You know, people want to forget about their problems, have some beer. And I guess the sugar from the candy would do you some good too. I don't know. But anyway, I just thought it was to be really interesting. So let's go ahead and move on to another article, which is courtesy of authorsandcritics.com. It is some girls from Hong Kong were taken to a hospital after seeing a ghost. Two Hong Kong schoolgirls were taken to the hospital after collapsing in terror, claiming they had seen ghosts of the Japanese soldiers from World War II. The girls were among a party of 12 exploring the site of an abandoned school in the New Territories, which is rumored to be haunted, when they claimed they saw an apparition of a marching army. The South China Morning Post reported that the girls fled in terror and fainted. The school, which closed in 1998, is believed to have been used by Japanese troops during the occupation of Hong Kong in World War II. They actually saw some ghosts and fainted from it. Why they had to be taken to the hospital, I don't know, unless maybe they hit their head or something, or they were just that traumatized from it. But it was still strange that they saw a ghost. Let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of postproduction.digitalmedianet.com. The Aliens to Zombies Convention. It's going to be hosted by the Emmy Award-winning FX artist Todd Masters. It's going to be in Hollywood from October 21st to October 22nd. The event will be open to the public. It is at the legendary Haunted Roosevelt Hotel. A highlight of the event will be the revival of Masters' infamous Monster Makers Bash costume party, which annually attracts the industry's top special effects artists. There's all the information here that you would know, anything from what's going on at what time to who to contact, all the information that you would possibly ever need to know about this. And if anybody goes to it, let me know. I'd love to know what happens during the Aliens to Zombies convention. I would love to know. If you happen to go out there, you live near Hollywood, let me know what happens. This next article is courtesy of dailymail.co.uk again. Dramatization of 1961 alien abduction to hit the big screen. The Betty and Barney Hill experience is going to be turned into a movie. Betty and Barney Hill were abducted in September of 1961 in the White Mountains near Portsmouth, New Hampshire. They're going to make this into a big blockbuster type of movie. I can't wait for it to come out. I'm anxious to see who they cast for the characters and exactly how it's done. You know, do they keep to the story or do they waver so far off from it that it doesn't resemble the actual original story at all? Either way, it's interesting. So let's go to move on to another article, which is courtesy of universetoday.com, courtesy of spacestationlive.jsc.nasa.gov. Basically, if you ever wanted to know what the space station is doing right now, the International Space Station, If you've ever wanted to watch it, well, you can now. A view of the Capcom station inside Mission Control and the space station itself are live on TV. It's called Space Station Live. You just have to go to the website that I'll post a link up to it, the one I just said, spacestationlive.jsc.nasa.gov. You can go there, you can watch the space station live, you can see live data, you can interact, resources, educators, operations, that kind of stuff. It's an interesting thing to know that they're actually doing this. They, you know, if you want to know what science experiments they're doing, well, there you go. You can go and check it out. The website's still in its beta form, so they say that there's still a few bugs there. The video feed sometimes goes blank, and not all the links work all the time, but the data is available, and interactive features are enough to make a space nerd swoon, according to the site. So if you're a space nerd, go for it. You'll swoon over this. I thought it was really neat. You know, I haven't had a chance to actually watch a whole lot of it myself, but it is an interesting thing. So again, I'll post links up to it. You know what, guys? Let's take one last quick little break here. And when we come back, we'll be taking a look at a camcorder, a video camera, supposedly found in a 2,000-year-old Egyptian tomb. And we're going to be taking a look at what is possibly a ghost that happens right after an IED attack. And for those of you who don't know what an IED is, it's an improvised explosive device, which are being used a lot in Afghanistan and Iraq. Anyway, after that, we're going to be taking a look at an alien that was killed by a dog. So you guys stay put. We'll be back in just a minute.
There was a time, not so very long ago, when there was a very clear difference between life and death. Those days are gone. All that remains are a handful of survivors with no clear direction but to survive and piece together the last remnants of society. The last remaining vestige. Vestige, an original audio drama brought to you by Jagged Edge Media. Coming October of 2010. www.fromtheedgepodcast.com.
I didn't think I could trust you. They told me you were a lobbyist.
Odd Blanchard. When you get involved, things always get ugly.
You son of a bitch. You barely made it out of that one.
Just who the f*** do you think you are, Blanchard?
You were going to help me.
Let me explain how things will work from here on out. First, you agree to disclose everything. No exceptions. Second, I officially agree to help you, which I will, no matter where this case takes me. Third, when I saw of your little problem, then you agree to help me.
I'm in the same business you are, Blanchard. I try to help people.
He's a very wicked man. But I've got him firmly under control.
It smelled fresh enough. Raw, living flesh. It was an odor that reminded me of an unkempt morgue. I liked it. Find out more about Art Blanchard's latest case and the foundation for the ethical treatment of the innocently damned, undead, and supernatural at fetidus.org.
Throughout the Planetary Union fleet, there are rumors about a secret ship named the PUV James Keeling, a ship no one has seen or can even describe. They say the crew on this ship has an 80% mortality rate, but not all deaths are from combat. That's why when people talk of this ship in hushed whispers, they don't call it the Keeling. They call it the Crypt, because it's filled with the dead. If you've been convicted of cowardice in battle, theft, assault, rape, even murder, sometimes you get a choice. Execution or serve a 2-year stint on the Keeling. The smart ones, they choose. execution. They say that in space, no one can hear you scream. But inside a ship, they can hear you just fine. The Crypt is a free audio novel by New York Times bestselling author Scott Sigler, creator of Infected, Contagious, and Ancestor. Download it at patiobooks.com.
All right, you guys. Now, this next thing that I wanted to take a look at is possibly one of the more strange things that I have in the show. It's what's supposedly a camcorder that was found in an archaeological dig from an Egyptian tomb. I don't really know whether or not it's a video camera, but supposedly it was found inside a canobic jar, which x-rays, you know, that they took showed this thing in there. An anonymous email was sent to the person who made this discovery, apparently in Giza in 1932, or regarding it is what they said. Is it a camcorder? It looks like one. All you see is a person sitting there holding a picture of what looks to be, I don't know, it could be anything really, but it appears to maybe be some type of an electronic device. I don't know. The video itself is only 38 seconds long. There's no audio to it. I don't really know why, but it supposedly is a video that just surfaced around the beginning of October that reportedly shows amazing images of a video camcorder that was found inside of a burial tomb inside a 2,000-year-old canopic jar. Canopic jars were commonly used in Egypt during the mummification processes and contained the organs of the deceased. Could this discovery at Giza be proof of the existence of time travel? The jar that appears to contain a modern-day camcorder in the photos has a jar stopper that is fashioned after a human head, perhaps one of the four sons of Horus. Specifically, it appears the jar stopper may have been made in the image of a human-headed god, Imseti, meaning that the canopic jar would have contained the liver of the deceased. There is nothing consistent with the burial processes at Egypt at the time that could account for the presence of an object resembling a camcorder to reside inside a jar that could have contained a human or should have contained a human liver. The images originated from a person who remains anonymous. This person claims to have been present at a meeting regarding the video camcorder that was found in Egypt under such mysterious circumstances. The jar was x-rayed, and the anonymous tipster provided photographs of these x-rays to the person who posted the video. Now, this goes along the same line of the Charlie Chaplin video from a long while back that shows the woman that looks like she's talking on a cell phone. Is this actually a video camcorder inside this jar? Is this just a hoax? What is this? I don't really know. Either way, it's an odd thing. I found it to be really interesting. I want you guys to go and take a look at it. Let me know what you think. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of LiveLeak.com. It's supposedly what is a ghostly apparition that climbs up on top of a tank after an IED explosion. And as I said earlier, an IED is an improvised explosive device. You're going to see this video. It looks like it's on a camcorder. You'll see out, it's kind of a dead grass, kind of a war zone looking place with a brick wall on one side. Now, I know some of you are going to have problems with this video because, you know, you just will. Just go watch it. But it's not that disturbing, it's not graphic, but what you'll see is a tank coming along from the right to the left down this what appears to be dirt road or so, and this big explosion goes off underneath the tank. And after it goes off, the tank rolls out of the picture. A couple of guys go running off from the left to the right while another tank comes speeding up. It stops at about the same place that the one tank got hit. With the tank sitting there, you'll see a guy get up out of the tank and kind of stick his head out and his body out, and he's just sitting there. He goes back down inside. You'll see another vehicle pull up behind the tank. Now, this is at about 2 minutes 50 seconds or so, so you can skip ahead to there. But you'll see what appears. Now, you'll see a red circle come from the right side of the screen over to the tank. Whatever this is, is this a hoax? What it appears to be is something moving across the screen that is invisible at first. And then as it moves across the screen, it becomes more and more solid and climbs up on the tank, lays down on the tank, and then eventually goes down inside the tank. Now, there's a soldier or two that come up, that run up to the front part of the tank, look up there, don't really do anything, run back. Now, is this just a person? Is this some kind of the invisibility suit that the military is saying that they have, these, you know, that invisibility cloak? Is this something along those lines? I don't know. I'm not sure. Is this a ghost? I don't really know what it is. All I do know is that it is strange that, you know, this person is invisible, or this ghost is invisible at first and becomes more and more solid as it runs across this opening towards the front of the tank. Is it video editing? Is it fake? Is it real? I don't know. I haven't heard anything else about it. There's, you know, people that are making fun of it down at the comments. They always do on Live Leak. They're harsh. People on Live Leak are harsh, y'all. If you ever go to Live Leak, don't make any comments because you're liable to just get run into the dirt. Just watch the videos, enjoy it, and go home. But anyway, let's go ahead and move on to the last thing that I want to talk about in this show. It's video of a dead alien. Well, at least what they're saying is a dead alien. Personally, I don't really know. It's a bit strange. It doesn't look real. It looks as if it's not exactly real, but at the same time, you know, maybe it is. I don't know. I'm not really sure. It's courtesy of scottcwaring.blogspot.com. The discovery date was September 26th. The location of the discovery is, I'm going to butcher this, Itajuba, Brazil? Itajuba, Brazil? Itajuba. Either way, it's in Brazil. It's supposedly what they're saying here, and I'm just going to read this. It says, note, it's dark black eyes and camouflage skin, typically talked about by other alien sightings. This is a translation from Spanish to English. It says, eyewitness states, driving the night, the dog barked nonstop outside. In the morning, we decided to check on the dog because he was so stressed out that night. Our dog, quote-unquote, spoke, was directly in the yard where we found the dead alien. On that first day, there was no bad smell coming from the alien's body, but over the next few days, the smell became overwhelming. Its smell was very unpleasant, the worst I've ever felt. He had two toes on each foot and three fingers on each hand and measured about 45 centimeters long. This video was made 2 days after we discovered the dead creature in their backyard when we decided to share our experience with the world. We were too afraid to touch the creature and left him in that location for 4 days. Although this dead alien disappeared strangely from where it had been, there still exists its smell on the spot and a strange black emerald goo substance on the ground. I hope someone can explain this phenomenon because my opinion is that it is not any animal that we know. Although it features amphibious white features, please tell us what you think. There's no more there to it other than that, you know, there's a video there that you can watch of it. Yeah, a video of them walking up to this creature. I can't read Spanish, sadly, so if anybody can, you know, let me know what you think. But it does show it there. It looks like it's maybe a foot long, but it looks fake. I mean, it doesn't look real. I wish it was real, but they're saying that it was killed by a dog. You know, and it had been there for 4 days. You know, dried out animals do look pretty gross and pretty weird. So I want you guys to go and take a look at this and let me know what you think about the alien in Brazil that was supposedly killed by a dog. Very, very strange stuff. Well, guys and gals, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take one last short little break here. And when we come back, we'll close out the show. Nobody is perfect, but I'm pretty fucking close. And I'm here to give you all a heavy heavenly dose. I think you better listen, cause I know who you are. And I think that you should treat me like a superstar. Because I'm more than just a human, I'm a gift to all of you. And I'm here to make sure that my message gets through. I wonder if you're really all as dumb as you look. Or are you smart enough to learn the rules in my book? I hope you understand that the knowledge I bring puts me in the position of a god or a king. Cause I'm blessed with the gift of the magic touch. And I wouldn't say that I'm asking for too much. All you have to do is get down on your knees and pray. And I promise you the remedy is on its way. But you can never be like me, so don't waste your time. Because I reign supreme and my position is divine. What's wrong with being self-possessed? Nobody said it's hard to be your second best. I got the gift and I know that I'm blessed. And I gotta get it on my chest. What the biggest, the best, better than the rest, better than the rest. What the biggest, the best, better than the rest, better than the rest. What the biggest, the best, better than the rest, better than the rest. What the biggest, the best, better than the rest, better than the rest. I'm not afraid of competition, cause I know that I'm the best. And you ever right, guys and gals, here are the formalities. Since it's the end of the show, let's go ahead and get them buried in the dirt and out of the way. If you have an experience or feedback, feel free to email me at the13skulls@gmail.com or info@the13skulls.com. Mainly, I'll check the13skulls@gmail.com. I seem to be better at checking that one than anything else. Or if you want, you can call in and tell me your phone number. The phone number is 817-986-0019. It's just a Google voicemail. It's not really a local number here. It's just a localized looking number. The 206-338-2205 number is dead, so don't call that one. There will be quite a lot of UFO sightings from ufoclearinghouse.webs.com that I will link to in the show notes, so go check them out. If you like the music in the show, some of it will be courtesy of the IOTA PromoNet at www.iotaalliance.com. Some of it might be courtesy of the Mevio's Music Alley, so you can check them out at music.mevio.com. The sound effects that have been, are being, and will be used in the show are courtesy of the Free Sound Project at www.freesound.org. If you have a podcast, radio show, or book, or anything you all you want to swap a promo or just give me yours so I can play it in the show, please do. I would love to. Just email it to me and let me know. If you want a button or magnet, I hate to say I am running low on buttons and magnets. I don't have any more buttons. I just mailed my last one out. I do have a magnet or two left, so if you want one, let me know. Just shoot me an email with your address that I can ship it to, and I'll get one out to you ASAP. I will again post links to everything you heard about in the show in the show notes. If you want to email me, I'd love to hear from you, see what your experiences are. I'm going to be doing another show here very, very soon. I'm going to be getting a show out maybe the day before before Halloween, so we can have some listener experiences get out there to you. But either way, I really appreciate you coming out and listening to the show, you guys. I hope you're doing good. Have a great day, night, week, weekend, whatever it is that you're listening to this, and I'll talk to you guys again on another day.
One of the biggest, the best, better than the rest.